This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 4 of our Bridge of the Faithful podcast. We've been together now for 2 months looking at this faithfulness in our life, and I can already tell that God is starting to change my heart toward being more faithful to Him and how He is revealing His heart to me and His faithfulness in our lives. So far we've already learned that, one, why I'm even doing this podcast in the first place, two, that Jesus came to rescue us and why we even need that rescuing at all, and three, what our responsibility is in response to that bridge that Jesus built for us with His rescue plan. So now we're going to start digging deeper into the real life situations where we're going to take those principles and use them in our own circumstances. I had a really hard time deciding what topic to go to this time around. I have several topic ideas that I'm working through, and none of them compelled me or seemed finished. Then after praying for God to show me which one to do next, a book called Unstoppable by Christine Kane came into my Overdrive app. I often will put a book onto my holds on this Overdrive app, which is a library app for renting books on your phone. And lately, God has timed them so that they fit perfectly into the themes that He has for me at the time. The first chapter focused on a theme that I had already started, which put a spotlight on the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. The focus on this theme happened a few weeks ago. One of the biggest blessings about picking a word for the year is that you start seeing things through a new lens, a new perspective. I was reading the story of Jesus' miracle with the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. For those of you that aren't familiar, each of the Gospels in the New Testament talks about this story, and you can see my show notes on my website for specific references for your further Bible reading. But this is where Jesus was preaching all day to 5,000 men, not including women and children. And at a point late in the day, everyone realized that everyone was getting hungry. And they were in a remote area, probably on purpose, so they could fit the 5,000 plus people. So in order for anyone to get food, they would have to leave. Jesus, however, did not want them to go hungry and asked for anyone to give any food. He was then presented with 5 small loaves and 2 small fish, which He then blessed and used to feed all of them with 12 baskets of scraps left over. When I usually read the story, I'm amazed at the miracle, but this time I was struck by a player I had never really given much notice, the little boy who gave Jesus the loaves and the fish. I love that it was a child who was used here. Honestly, I don't know if it could have been anyone but a child. Here, Jesus is asking for anyone to give some food to help feed over 5,000 people. If anyone happened to bring food, it probably would have been just enough for themselves, so why bother even offering it up for that many? The idea is laughable. But this little boy had the childlike faith that God wants us to have, the innocent faith that is generous, eager, and 100% trusting. This child was probably extremely hungry, and the Bible even emphasized how small the amount of food was, but it was all he had, and he gave it freely. That is all Jesus expected, wanted, and needed, and he multiplied it exponentially. This little boy's situation resonates a lot in my life right now. I'll hear a call, a need that God wants us to fill, but when I look into my lunchbox of talents, resources, education, and time I have available, it feels infinitesimally small compared to the actual thing that needs to be fulfilled. But I often forget that He isn't asking me to do it alone. He's just asking me to offer what I do have to Him so that the world can see what greatness He can do, even when given so little. This relationship that our giving has with His greatness has 2 main motives that I want to focus on today. 1, we are broken and inadequate. And 2, God uses broken and inadequate things to be generously abundant. When Jesus received the meager 5 small loaves and 2 small fish, He didn't say, whoa, this is a terrible gift. It's never going to be enough. Or He didn't say, well, there is no way we can use this. This was not prepared by a Michelin star chef, so there is no way it could ever be good enough for me. And He definitely did not laugh in the boy's face and say, you are too young, naive, and uneducated to be used by me. No, the first thing Jesus did was take the bread and gave thanks for it. He knew what God was going to do with this broken up bread and fish, and that God was going to make something so little into something so great. And Jesus then took the broken pieces of this food and used it, just like He takes the broken pieces of our lives that we're willing to hand over to Him, and He multiplies them. And when God multiplies, He does it to extremes. Let's look at two other stories where God shows his faithfulness in abundance. Back when the Israelites were in the wilderness after escaping the Egyptians, there was a lot of complaining about who should be in charge. They began to question God's choice of Aaron being in charge of the priesthood. What they ended up doing was to ask God to decide by letting them see a physical representation of his choice. They were told to take the staffs of all the possible leaders and basically plant them in the ground in the tabernacle, and then to see if any of them sprouted buds. So these dead sticks sprouting buds. The next morning, not only did Aaron's staff have buds, but it had sprouts, blooms, and even ripe almonds. And when God uses something to make a point, he really makes the statement clear. Darlene Deibler was a missionary in Asia during World War II. While there, she was taken as a prisoner of war by the Japanese and placed in a very uncomfortable, poorly providing camp. Darlene wrote an autobiography called Evidence Not Seen, A Woman's Miraculous Faith in the Jungles of World War II. As the title says, her book describes a raw, real struggle, including amazing faith, that this woman had while literally being tortured and starved, and still giving God the glory. One small but my favorite story really struck me here. For months, Darlene was placed on death row in solitary confinement. She was an American, and therefore the Japanese thought the only reason an American would be in the Asian jungle was to spy on the Japanese. While in that cell, she developed diseases, was fed rice and worms one time a day, dealt with bed bugs and other vermin, was required to help keep her room clean, and to bow perfectly to the soldiers no matter how unhealthy, hungry, and whatever state she was in. And one day she looked out her window to see a woman find some bananas, and she hid them in her shirt to take back to other women. Darlene was starving, and all she wanted was just one of those bananas. But she was in solitary confinement and therefore had no access to this woman. Soon after this, she began to pray for God to give her just one of those bananas. However, doubt almost immediately set in, and she began to see how it was completely impossible, and she started giving God excuses as to why she knew that he couldn't do it and how she was okay with that. But maybe an hour or so later, a man who was her supervisor at the camp she was originally at, who she had led to Christ, came to visit her. He had started to care for her as a friend, and he saw the horribly now nourished, unhealthy state she was in. And the next day, Darlene received not only one banana that she prayed for, but 92 bananas from that Mr. Yamaji. Darlene was filled with shame that she had seen his miraculous miracles over and over in other ways, but she didn't trust him enough to give her one banana. And in her book, she says, "In the quiet of the shadowed cell, the answered back with my heart. That's what I delight to do, the extremely abundant and above anything you ask or think. I know in those moments that nothing is impossible to my God." These are three stories, one each from the Old Testament, the New Testament, and our present time period. God is the same past, present, and future. And this consistency is clear. God's faithfulness is overwhelmingly extravagant and abundant. There is no way that we can ever live up to God's ability. Compared to him, we are extremely weak. So in order for God to be able to use us fully, we need to be humble. God wants to use our weakness to show his strength, and he will not be glorified if we glorify ourselves, which is probably why he loves to use the weak and humbled vessels. I'm going to be personally honest here. I really struggle with the desire to be needed. Nothing makes me feel more valuable than being able to fulfill someone's need through my talents and abilities. And this may seem like an okay thing, but in many ways, it's a huge pride issue. Pride in my talents and resources makes me feel good about myself. And this is selfish, and it does not glorify God. Now, that being said, when I humble myself, I need to make sure, one, I'm doing it because I truly love to help people, which I do. And two, I realize that God does not need me. Because he doesn't. Jesus could have picked up a handful of dirt and fed those 5,000 people. God could have smacked all those Israelites in the face and forced them all to do his bidding. And God could have made a banana float magically into Darlene's prison cell. But the beautiful thing is that while God doesn't need me, he wants to use me and use me well. Christine Kane says in her book, "God is not asking us to come to him only when we are completely ready and well-equipped. He wants us to come to him as our fully broken self. And the beauty from our ashes when offered to him will be transformed exponentially, and I can't wait to see what he does." This truth is really important to remember as we start to dig deeper into God's faithfulness. And I'm currently trekking into understanding God's faithfulness in hard times where we don't understand where He is or what He's doing. Having a foundation of understanding this fundamental characteristic of our relationship with God will help the rest of the unseen plan make more sense. And we'll look at that in the next couple of weeks. 2 Corinthians 12:8-10. Three different times I begged the Lord to take it away, and each time He said, "My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weakness so that the power of Christ can work through me. That's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses and in the insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles that I suffer for Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong."
This has been episode 4 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast entitled 5 Loaves and 2 Fish. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/4.